Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts from prior shows are also available on the website, either of the websites. Today is October 12, 2016. The markets were mixed today, the Dow closing at 18,144, the NASDAQ at 5239, and the S&P at 2139. It's an absolutely gorgeous evening, so I hope that you are listening on a pleasant drive home tonight. It was a very nice drive into the studio this evening as well, but we hope that we keep you entertained this evening for an hour. Our pledge drive has just wrapped up. They promised that when they met their goal that they shut down the pitching, and indeed they did. I was intending to come tonight to pitch for pledges to WDIY, and I found out they met their goal today, so it's a little quiet in the studio. I always say you can still give anytime you want, though, at the website, wdiy.org. I normally do a challenge, and I guess I don't need to do that tonight. We met our goal. But any of our listeners who didn't already pledge, I'm sure that you can still do so, again, at wdiy.org. Online is pretty easy to do. So tonight, in light of having a pledge drive, I decided to talk about charitable giving, ways to give that make a difference for you and your favorite charity. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori Catanzaro is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And in fact, last week I talked quite a bit about Roth IRAs, and we didn't have too many calls with questions because it was the pledge drive and you couldn't go live on air. But if you do have follow-up questions to that or other general questions about some financially related topic, you can call and talk live with me tonight during this hour. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Lori. She writes it down and she brings it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer it. So that is 610-758-8810. And email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So www.yourfinancialchoices.com. And the question comes through an email to me, and I will answer that when I am back in the office. So on to our topic, ways to give that make a difference for you and your favorite charity. So let me start with the broad spectrum of giving, which would be time, talent, and treasure. This is what I grew up hearing, time, talent, and treasure. Many nonprofit organizations appreciate your time. Volunteers are rarely refused. Volunteering helps nonprofits in many ways. It gives them the ability to use your time and your talent as well without having to hire maybe extra staff. So it's a voluntary kind of gift on your part. You don't get to take a deduction for your volunteer time. You know, if I make $10 an hour, I don't get to say, oh, I volunteered for 10 hours at $10. It's a $100 deduction. That's not how that works. This is just a gift of your time. And quite often, organizations like to tap into people's talents. So for example, when I had, you know, when I was working part-time, I would help with some of the bookkeeping at the church. It was my time and my talent. Some people, it might just be their talent. You see nonprofits that may need legal services. So there will be law firms that may provide some legal work to nonprofits, or accountants that provide some accounting work maybe for nonprofits. So it's very nice when we can work together in the community. But again, keep in mind that you're not getting an income tax deduction for your time or your talent, no matter what that is worth. So what you can get a deduction for might be contributions. And there's a variety of ways that we can have contributions, monetary contributions, gift in kind. Perhaps you are driving for Meals on Wheels or an organization like that. As you're doing volunteer hours that require you to drive places, keep track of your mileage, and you can get a deduction on your tax return if you itemize deductions. And the charitable contribution rate is 14 cents a mile, I believe. It's not as much as what we would get for business miles, and I guess it's under the premise of you're doing this out of the goodness of your heart, so they're not going to give you this big, gigantic deduction for driving around, but it's something. And for folks who are doing things like Meals on Wheels, that can add up to be quite a bit. Perhaps you're on a board of a nonprofit organization and you go to board meetings. You could keep track of your miles. Quite often, it's not always worth it for folks to keep track of it. If you're doing maybe, you know, 10 trips of 10 miles and it's 100 miles times 14 cents, it might not add up to a lot and it might not be worth your time. So you want to pay attention whether it is worth it or not. So those kinds of deductions may end up adding up. If you are a scout leader, you may have to buy a uniform to be a scout leader. That would be a deduction because it's a uniform. Some people don't think about that or realize that. It's very unlike when people come to me and say, oh, I have to wear nice clothes for work and I had to buy a suit. Well, that's not a uniform. That's not a deduction. We have doctors and nurses who have uniforms that they have to wear. Those are deductible. But in the case of people who are working, we don't get a deduction for that. But if you're buying a uniform for a nonprofit organization, such as the Scouts, that is an income tax deduction for you. I believe also if you're buying supplies for that organization. So you want to keep track of your receipts. So let's talk about some nonprofits and when do we get charitable deductions for donations to nonprofits. I want to make sure that people realize that a nonprofit isn't necessarily a charitable organization. So when I talk about a nonprofit that qualifies for charitable contributions to be a deduction on their tax return, I'm talking about 501c3 organizations, and that's under the Internal Revenue Code. And quite often you will see when you make a donation to such an organization, there will be a tagline at the bottom of the receipt, for example, and it will say no goods or services were, you know, received for this. Typically, we see that for sure on any contributions we've made over $250. Sometimes we'll see it even if we're making those $10 and $25 deductions. What I have found happens is all of those mailings we get in the mail with people requesting charitable contributions, we will see though the tagline for the 501c3, and even though they don't technically have to give you a receipt, quite often they will, because it keeps that right in front of your face, reminders that you've made these contributions in the past. Could you make more? And it's another opportunity for them to get in front of you. So we're looking at 501c organizations under the Internal Revenue Code when we're talking about charitable contributions that are deductible. There are certain nonprofits that are not charitable that people will think, oh, I can write this off, and you cannot, for things such as PTOs or associations or civic organizations. Those typically are not falling under the 501c3 provisions. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the various ways you can make contributions to your charity, and they may have different tax impacts. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, this is Wagner Previato, Executive Director at WDIY. On behalf of the Board of Directors, volunteers, and staff, I want to thank everyone who helped make our 2016 Fall Pledge Drive a success. We couldn't be here without you. Again, thank you for supporting WDIY 88.1 FM, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about charitable giving tonight. And now that hopefully folks have called in and made their pledges, you might need to know what you do from here, because we want you to save those tax receipts that you'll get in the mail acknowledging your contribution and put it in a folder called Taxes 2016. When you get that confirmation, you stick it in the folder, and then at tax time, if you are someone who itemizes deductions, you can include that in your tax paperwork and claim the deduction. Maybe you are someone who is not sure if you're going to itemize deductions. Maybe you haven't itemized in the past. Maybe you are borderline. I always say just keep track of the receipt. Revisit that every time you do your tax return to see if you're close or if it's worthwhile to do. We are going to talk about different ways that people can make charitable contributions. And there may be some advantages for people who are over 70 and a half who do not itemize their deductions, that there's still a way for you to get the benefit of making charitable contributions. So we're going to talk about that as we go through the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, and you can call and ask questions live on air or off air. Just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. And it doesn't have to be about charitable giving. It can be about, you know, financial topics. Last week, I talked about Roth IRAs. At the tail end of the show tonight, I'm hoping to fit in also talking about charitable giving as part of your estate planning. So if you have questions about estate planning, this is always a good topic that coordinates with charitable giving and estate planning. So if you have questions, 610-758-8810. The easiest and nicest donation to a charitable organization is cash. And when I say cash, you know, I don't mean like the greenbacks. I mean, you know, write a check or do it on a charge card or a credit card or something like that. It doesn't have to be like literally cash, but monetary donations, that's the easiest donation. They appreciate it. There's not a lot of administrative paperwork for them. And it's pretty nice, and it's outright. Quite often I will have, there's so many different charitable giving opportunities, but one that can get a little complicated is something you'll hear people talk about called a CRUT, a charitable remainder unit trust, or a CRAT, a charitable remainder annuity trust. So there's different kinds of fancy charitable giving that could be done using these types of vehicles, these trusts. That is a little bit more complicated. So when I have had people come to me to ask about these strategies because they've heard about them being promoted typically by the nonprofits as a way to kind of promote awareness of their charitable mission or their nonprofit mission and to kind of offer the donors a way to give where they might still benefit in some way, like where they could still get some interest off of annuity. And when people have come to me to talk about this, I ask them a few questions. Number one, do you need a stream of income? Are you going to break the bank by making this contribution to a charitable remainder trust? Because maybe that's not the best thing for you to do, to kind of fork over the money to a charitable trust and then get this small stream of income off of it. And I'm talking in some basic terms. There are certainly situations where this might apply to some folks, but quite often, if you have the money to make that kind of donation, then just make the donation. Because if it takes $50,000 donation to a charitable trust that's going to pay you, and I'm making these numbers up, $1,000 of interest a year, well, and what ends up happening is there's a complicated calculation that says the IRS says, oh, if you do something like that, and you're getting a present interest of some of that donation back, well, you didn't really make a donation of $50,000 because you're supposed to get this $1,000 a year back as an annuity. So the value of your contribution really wasn't $50,000. Maybe, depending on your life expectancy, it might be $30,000. Well, maybe you have $30,000 to just give. Then maybe just give that or provide for them when you're gone. So you really want to explore all the different options that someone might set before you. So that makes me go back to the idea of a very simple way to give is cash. Now, that is not always the best income tax strategy. So if you're going to be charitably inclined, which is such a wonderful thing, maybe you could get an extra little benefit from being charitably inclined if you do the proper tax planning along with that. And then that kind of amps up your gift, or it's one of those things where you get back what you give. So you give something and then you get a little bit of a better tax break on it. So I'll talk about that in just a minute. I want to mention that when we are making charitable contributions in whatever nature, we want to make sure that you retain a receipt for your gift. So the IRS issued guidelines several years ago on the documentation for charitable contributions. So I recommend that you either get the receipt, have the receipt, ask for the receipt. When they are donations over $250, the charitable organization is required to give you a written acknowledgement indicating whether or not you've received any goods and services in exchange for this gift. If you have not, you just paid $250 out to the charitable organization, they're going to give you that receipt saying you made the contribution of $250. If PBS has a fund drive and they're playing Graham Nash as an incentive for you to make a bigger and bigger donation, and they will send you a Graham Nash CD, as they did to me, then they're going to send a receipt saying Lori did not give $130. She got a benefit of that CD, and the real contribution might be more like $110. All right, so they have to acknowledge particular gifts. And even though that's under $250, usually you can expect that the charitable organization is going to give you that acknowledgement when you have received something in kind for that contribution. If it's under $250, then you want to make sure that you hang on to canceled checks or credit card statements if the charitable organization did not send you a receipt. Your canceled check or credit card statement can serve as the receipt or documentation for the charitable contribution if it's under $250. Back in the day, people would say, yeah, I made a contribution of $3,000. And I'd say, do you have, receipts at home, backup for this? They'd say, yeah. And we could put $3,000 on the tax return. Nowadays, with the way penalties escalate for preparers and signers, taxpayer signing under penalties of perjury, with these new rules where you have to have the backup and the receipts, you want to make sure you definitely have the backup and receipts. And in fact, we have our clients sign off confirming that indeed they do have the receipts for these charitable contributions. So make sure that you have them. If you get in the habit of keeping those in a file for the current tax year every year and then keep your backup for your tax returns for at least 3 years, if not longer, then you won't get, you know, you won't forget. You'll be in that good habit of doing it. So it's just really, really good to have the proper records for that. When we come back from this next break, we're going to talk about all the various, well, not all of them, but a majority of some of the charitable options that are available to folks, giving outright, giving at death, large gifts, giving cash, giving appreciated assets, using a community foundation, a donor advised fund. So we're going to go over those when we come back. If you have questions, doesn't have to be about charitable giving, but if you do, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on a lovely, beautiful Wednesday evening, October 12, 2016. We have a caller on line one. We have Carolyn in Sailorsburg. Carolyn, hi. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, I can. Lori, how are you?
Good. Thanks for listening tonight.
Oh, thank you so much. You've just been a wonderful source of information. And the topic you picked tonight is really near and dear to my heart.
Agreed.
My husband and I are volunteers, and we're very involved with two different 501c3 groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to tell the folks out there that are listening that these types of groups are wonderful ways to get involved with your community, to learn so much. If you're a younger person, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can use documented times working for these types of organizations on a resume. I think it would look good if you're just getting started out in life.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. I think that, in fact, I was just thinking of that recently as well. So many kids coming out of college haven't had the opportunity to get into the job market the way they want to, or they're working jobs that aren't necessarily in their field. This is where you can use that time and talent. That's a great point to make, Carolyn. And they can put it on their resume as volunteer opportunities, you know, worked at WDIY in the studio doing engineering, or worked for the 501c3 setting up accounting systems or things like that. That's
right, exactly. We're always looking for people to help with things like our newsletters, our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of young people have those skills.
Yeah, that's
we're
a great idea.
We're not so great ourselves.
Agreed.
That's always appreciated. In fact, we were just involved with a fall festival last month that involved both of the groups that we're involved with. We got to meet some wonderful people, including a family that the man works there at your business.
Oh, wonderful. And you might as well say your groups, Carolyn. What are the 501c3s that you're involved with?
Okay, I'll start with the easy one. That's
mm-hmm.
the Friends of Cherry Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost every wildlife refuge in the nation has a friends group that's supportive of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that runs the refuge system. So that's just a wonderful way to get out in the community and help the wildlife refuge system. My husband and I are also involved with the Aquashicola Poho Poco Watershed Conservancy.
Well, that's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful, yes.
And you can say it.
It took a while, but I got it down now. We are just working with conserving the watershed and protecting and promoting awareness of it, because so many of the homes up in this area get their water from wells.
Mm.
And what happens in the watershed affects affects your well and your water supply, not to mention the natural world. So, but it's just great to get involved with these things. And also, I'd love to point out, if I have just a moment,
sure,
that people who are retired and have some skills, like one of our folks is an accountant, a retired accountant, and she's the treasurer for two groups that I know of. And we just are so thankful to have her.
Well, because nonprofits have tax filings that they have to do. Sometimes it's easier than a whole big tax return. There's something we call the 990 easy filing or a postcard filing, but regardless, those have to be done.
Yes, so, and you have to keep track of everything coming and going.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So these nonprofits need a lot of help, and it's quite often all volunteer. So,
yes.
And with the Friends of Cherry Valley, you said it's connected or supports some of the mission of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Is that like you're coordinated somehow?
Yes, we're a support organization for Fish and Wildlife.
Okay.
They don't have the staffing and the funding to do everything that needs to be done. So if a friends group forms in the area of a wildlife refuge, in our case it's the Cherry Valley National Wildlife Refuge, we do things like do the community outreach, have the festivals. We have a spring and a fall festival, and some of our volunteers do the mowing up at one of the properties, or, you know, just tend the grounds up there. Coordinating
great.
Everything that, you know, takes to that it is needed to put a festival on for everybody. But it's a lot of community outreach, and it just makes people aware that, you know, this refuge is here. It's here for your use. You know, there's trails people can enjoy, and sometimes there's fishing or whatever.
So you know. Do you guys have a website? How do you get people involved?
Friends of Cherry Valley does have a website. Unfortunately, because it is a handful of people, it hasn't been updated in a while. But if you Google it, it will come up. They also have a Facebook page, Friends of Cherry Valley.
Okay, that's great. And who knows, maybe someone's listening for up at your area and we're looking for a way to get involved. So maybe they'll find something.
Okay, I hope so. It would be great.
Yeah.
I also just want to quick mention that Jim and I recently put together our estate plan, and we named a lot of, since we have no children, we're charitably inclined, we did get a list of beneficiaries who would benefit once we pass on. And it's just a great way to support groups or organizations that are near and dear to your heart, and you know, there's the working on a cause that you believe in.
That's wonderful, Carolyn. We need more people like you. That's really wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Can I ask you one? Do I have time for one quick question?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. I am the treasurer of the Akwesasca-Pohopoco Watershed, or APWC for short, and we are a 501c3 organization. I know that any contributions or donations of the monetary type are tax deductible. Our memberships, I call them membership donations because they're really going all into the same pot to support the organization. All you get for a membership really is emails to keep up to date and newsletters to, you know, find out what's going on with us. Would those be tax deductible as well?
Yes, I would expect so, because just as we have with WDIY, when we do our pledge drives, those are people renewing their membership, because it's all in support of the mission of the nonprofit. And and in order to get that 501c3, you have to have a mission typically, and I'm going off the top of my head here, of like education, some kind of outreach, church, that type of thing. So there has to be a certain mission under the IRS guidelines. But yeah, I would say that membership fees are supporting that mission. That's a deduction. It's if you get something in return, like as I mentioned, you know, a CD or, you know, a video or something like that. That's why WDIY doesn't give those gifts out like they used to, because it complicates the donation and acknowledging the donation. And now instead they put it back into the community with partnerships with people like Second Harvest, you know, with organizations like Second Harvest and, you know, Kids and Cops and different things they do throughout the year. So, yeah, I think you should be good on that. I would expect you'd be, that would be a deduction.
Okay. I thought so, but I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
All right,
so
Carolyn,
much.
Thanks. It was so much fun talking with you. Thanks for calling in.
You too, Lori.
Take care.
Take
have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Folks, we're going to our next break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about charitable giving and different ways that you can gift outright using or appreciated stock, cash, qualified charitable distributions, gifts at death, large gifts, small gifts, different ways that you can do that. So if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. Your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 66 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 44. Thursday, chance of showers, highs around 68. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, sunny skies with highs each day in the upper 60s. The time now is 6:30 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Welcome back to the show. This is Lori Siebert. We're talking about charitable giving tonight. For folks who have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And you can call and talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. Tonight, we had expected to have our pledge drive, but we finished early, so that's wonderful. But I'm still here talking about charitable giving. So we will never say no to pledges. If you were thinking you were going to call in tonight and you want to make a pledge, the website is available. We can't do it on the phone anymore because we don't have volunteers taking those calls, but you can always go on wdiy.org. And I hope that Seamus will let me know if people were contributing during the hour. So we are talking about charitable giving. I don't know if anyone had heard about the, I think it was like a story on Warren Buffett. He was talking about his tax return, how much money he has paid in taxes, and how much he's had in charitable contributions. And I believe it was, and I don't recall which year it was referring to, it might have been 2014, 2015. I think his charitable contribution was something like $2 billion. But he has a carry forward of his charitable contribution because there it is limited. So he still had, he had income. He had this charitable contribution, which might have offset a lot more of his income, but the IRS imposes limits on the amount that we can take as a charitable deduction. Most of us do not have the problem that Warren Buffett had, which is the limitation of the charitable contribution. So pretend we have $100,000 on page one of our tax return, and we donate $100,000 of cash. The IRS isn't going to let us take a deduction for $100,000. They're going to limit that to 50% of the AGI, the adjusted gross income, on cash type contributions. There's a 50% limitation. If we donate in other ways, such as appreciated securities, appreciated stock, I may have stock that's been in my family for years and years, and it was gifted down, and the cost basis is $10,000, and it's now worth $100,000. Back to my same example of if my tax return is $100,000 and I've donated $100,000 of stock, the IRS has a different limitation. If it's appreciated stock of long-term holding period, then the limit, it's limited to 30% of my adjusted gross income. Because logically think, okay, my example was the cost basis, I think, was like $20,000. It's worth $100,000. That would be $80,000 of gain if I sold it and donated the cash, and I would recognize that $80,000 of gain and pay all the income tax on it. Instead of doing that, the IRS says, hey, you can donate the appreciated stock, and you don't have to recognize the gain or pay the tax on the gain, but we're going to give you a deduction of the $100,000, but for the limit. So I have my $100,000 of income. I've donated my $100,000 of appreciated stock, long-term stock. My charitable contribution is going to be limited to 30% of my adjusted gross income. Remember, my adjusted gross income was $100,000 times 30%. The IRS is going to let me take a deduction for $30,000. That's on Schedule A. I itemize my deductions. But Lori, what happens to the rest of it? So I made a $100,000 donation of the fair market value of this stock. I was only able to use $30,000 of it. The $70,000 unused piece for the current year can carry forward, and you can carry it forward for 5 years. That same threshold is going to apply each year thereafter. I have seen this work very well for contributions to conservation easements, things like that. So there's limitations on those as well, but they can carry forward for 5 years. Quite often, what we'll do in tax planning when we're looking at things like this is if we see that someone's made a really large contribution and their income limits how much is deductible, we may want to look at increasing their income on the tax return. And we can increase the income on their tax return maybe by doing things like converting IRA monies to Roth or taking capital gains that they've been waiting to sell this stock that's been in the family forever and ever, and the gains are just way too much, and they want to diversify it out of the position more than just donating $100,000. So they might donate $100,000, and then they might have, you know, a whole boatload still sitting there on the sidelines. Well, maybe sell some of it off to kind of raise the income a little bit to increase the charitable deduction. There's lots of other factors that we would look in that to see, you know, is the taxpayer on their deathbed? Is the taxpayer going to live for some or more years? What other kind of income do we anticipate over the years? So I'm simplifying some of this a little bit, but it's to stimulate the thought process and all of the techniques and strategies that are available to us to use, etc. So some of our charitable gifting may be limited. So cash, it also gives us that income tax deduction. But most of us don't have to worry about that limitation. I've only seen that, you know, a handful of times. So typically you get to take the full deduction because you're not donating so much, more than 30% of your adjusted gross income or more than 50%, depending on what kind of gift you're making. But you are getting that income tax deduction. And for some people, they actually use it as an estate planning technique too. Maybe they want to reduce their estate while they're alive a little bit more. Maybe they have such a large estate, they're going to have federal estate tax issues. You can make those charitable contributions at death as well. And I'll talk about that if I have time as we get closer to the end of the show. But lots of different ways to do that. We have talked a lot on prior shows about a new strategy that's been available to us over the past couple years called the qualified charitable distribution. And this is what I mentioned earlier in the show for people who are 70 and a half or older who have IRAs where they have to take required minimum distributions. You can take money out of your IRA and give it to the charity. You have to have the check written to the charity from the IRA. You have to work with your custodian to do this right. Give the check to your charity, and then you don't have to report that income on page one of your return. This is a great technique for people who don't itemize deductions. When you are retired and you're married, filing joint, you've got a high standard deduction and you're over 65, because in this case, you have to be over 70 and a half to do these qualified charitable distributions. You don't have a mortgage anymore. You don't have income taxes you're paying for state and local. So you just don't have any deductions. This is a great, great technique. I can't say it enough. Just like when I talk about Roths all the time, I'm going to talk about qualified charitable distributions for people who are 70 and a half or older. And this applies to your church, too. A lot of people don't realize this. When they think, oh, nonprofits, they're thinking about places like the United Way or the Red Cross or the Salvation Army. This actually qualifies for your church, too. So if you go to church and let's pretend you give them $3,000 a year and your required minimum distribution is $10,000 from your IRA, you could have the custodian write a check for $3,000 to the church, deliver the check to the church, say, here, church, this is my contribution for the year. I'm not going to be putting money in the envelopes every week. And you're not even going to see me in church, but I'm not going to be putting the envelopes in the basket because here's the one check. This is a great tax strategy. Your required minimum distribution was $10,000. So you give $3,000 to the church, and then your custodian's going to send you a check for $7,000, maybe a little less for taxes. And then at tax time, you're going to get a 1099-R reporting $10,000 distribution. But wait, Lori, I gave $3,000 to the church. The church is going to give you a receipt, and you have to make sure that you keep that in your tax files and marry that to your 1099-R, put those together so that your tax preparer knows of the $10,000, $3,000 was a qualified charitable distribution, and then they only report $7,000 on page one of your tax return. It's instant tax savings, especially for those folks who do not itemize. If you're giving to charity, I don't like people to do this for $50 or $100. It's just a lot of administrative paperwork. But when we're talking $1,000 or more, I think it's a great strategy to use. For people who itemize, it could be hit or miss whether it's going to give you that much of a tax advantage, because you're getting already itemized and you're doing charitable contributions, you're getting the deduction on Schedule A anyway. It might not make a difference. Where it really makes a difference, if you're someone who is just over the amount of itemizing over your standard deduction. So let's pretend your standard deduction is $15,600. And when you itemize deductions and it's $16,000. So you're only $400 over, but your charitable contributions are $4,000. Well, that's when you definitely would have an advantage for doing the qualified charitable distribution. All right. With that, some caveats, you can't do more than $100,000. So if your required minimum distribution is $10,000, as in my example, but maybe I have a $1 million IRA, I could do up to $100,000 this way, all right? It doesn't have to be the whole required minimum distribution. It could be less. It could be the whole required minimum distribution, or it could be up to $100,000. That's a wonderful technique. So that's a way to kind of make outright gifts cash. We've talked about the qualified charitable distribution or appreciated stock, and that's long-term. If you have a stock that you want to donate to a charitable organization and it's short-term, then the deduction is limited to your cost basis. So in my example of I get this stock, its cost basis is $10,000. It's like skyrockets in less than a year. It's now worth $100,000, but it's short term. If I try to donate that and I haven't held it for a year, I will only get the deduction for the $10,000. So you definitely want to be careful as to what kind of securities you would be donating to organizations. All right, lots of advantages for donating appreciated stock. Love the qualified charitable distribution as well. Sometimes you might be someone who might think, I don't know if I will have enough money to live on for the rest of my life. So maybe you don't want to do these kinds of contributions during your life. You could do them through your will, or you can do them through your beneficiary designation. What happens when you wait till you die is you're not getting an income tax deduction for that, and you're also not seeing the benefits of your donation during your lifetime, which I strongly encourage people to participate in charitable giving while you're alive, so that you can enjoy the benefits of seeing your contributions make a difference in your communities, as Carolyn was talking about earlier. So you want to look at whether it makes sense to do it during your lifetime, or maybe if you're really, really nervous about having enough money, you can definitely do it and wait to do it as part of your estate planning. I also want to mention that there are situations where people may not want a nonprofit to know, or a charitable organization to know, that they're donating. Maybe they want to stay anonymous. We are going to talk about ways that you can use other organizations to maintain your anonymity, or maybe you are someone who really wants to give back to the community. There's so many organizations that you want to help, but you don't want to write 100 checks to all of the different, you know, community organizations. There are answers for that as well. When we come back, I'm going to talk about using a community foundation. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is Lori Siebert. I want to remind folks, if you are a new listener or a regular listener who is not aware, that we have podcasts of prior shows, and those are available at yourfinancialchoices.com or wdiy.org. We are talking about charitable giving tonight. There's still plenty of time for questions if you have any. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I'm going to wrap up the last segment of the show talking about some other ways to give rather than you writing the check directly to the charity. You may want to take advantage of a couple different avenues, which we will call donor-advised funds, or using a community foundation. There is something called a private foundation. You might hear about, well, there are certain people in the news right now who have private foundations or have foundations. A private foundation is a little bit more complicated, some rules around those. You get to set up this foundation and make distributions out of it or grants out of it to other charitable institutions. The deduction for that type of contribution has more limits than what I described earlier. If you're making a contribution of cash to a private foundation that you've set up, it's limited to 30% of your adjusted gross income, the deduction. It can also be carried forward for 5 years. And the appreciated stock is limited to 20% of the adjusted gross income. So we're usually seeing those with higher net worth clients who are setting up family kind of private foundation for typically really specific reasons, and as a way to get their family involved in charitable giving. Donor advised funds might be a fund that would be set up from one of the well-known custodians that you might hear about. You make a contribution to this donor advised fund. You can't technically direct it exactly, but maybe give a little guidance on what your interests are. And that account can build up in value, and then that custodian is making the contributions out of it. So I might make a contribution to the donor advised fund of $20,000 this year. Maybe it, and I get a deduction for that $20,000. It could be appreciated stock. It could be cash. Certain limitations on that as well, the 50 and 30% that I mentioned earlier. But I can't tell it exactly where to donate it, but they are given guidelines. They usually work within those guidelines. That's how they get people to keep giving the money back. But then the contribution is from the donor advice fund and not you personally. It allows you to kind of have a little bit of a hands-off on that. It's a one-time, you could do it one time, you could do it every year, and it might streamline your giving a little bit. There is also something we have called community foundations. And in particular, I have had on the show a number of times the folks from the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation. I think it's a great organization. They've been around for almost 50 years. I believe they're celebrating their 50th year anniversary next year, so that should be fun. But they work with donors and their advisors to establish charitable funds that meet your philanthropic goals. So they will talk to you about what your mission is, what your desire is, who do you want to help. And the reason I feel some people are attracted to the community foundations is because typically we're talking about supporting nonprofits and organizations within our Lehigh Valley community. Now, some people then will get turned off by that and say, well, you know, I want to, of course, help people in my Lehigh Valley community, but I might also want to still patronize or help organizations that are not in our community. So don't be dissuaded by working with our community foundation, because they too can still make contributions outside of our area. It's just that locally, what's nice is they are familiar with the local organizations. They vet them, they visit them, they meet them, they talk with them. So they know how these organizations are putting to use the money that is coming to them through the Community Foundation, which is coming from donors to the Community Foundation who have indicated to them how their areas of interest. It might be education, it might be the arts, it might be sciences, it might be I don't know what else, but medical research or something. So there's a number of different areas that they will sit down and talk to you about. So they are in the community, they have community knowledge, they help the donors learn more about the local organizations and programs that make a difference in the area. They will talk to you about the different gift types that we've talked about tonight, including cash, appreciated securities, those IRA distributions I mentioned, and even more complex assets. It's efficient. You can do, just as I mentioned with the donor advised fund, which could go, you know, anywhere in the country, with the Community Foundation, you can do something similar where you make a contribution and have grants go out to multiple organizations through that fund that you have then discussed with the Community Foundation as to your interest, your areas of interest. And then you're not having to coordinate that every year. They're watching out for you on that. And you can do it and get recognition for it, or do it anonymously. So that's nice. You can name a fund of your choosing if you want to do it that way or not. There's a lot of flexibility there. What I think is important to know, too, is that the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation can keep things private for you if you choose, or let you have a name to it and put that name behind it. But they are watching out for you. Where that could really make a difference is sometimes I will see people name particular organizations in their will. As Carolyn mentioned earlier, they're naming a number of charitable organizations. If we make our will today and we don't look at our will again for 20 years, the charitable organization that we named 20 years ago may not exist now. And typically when we pass away, and if we have gifts over a certain dollar amount, the attorney general for the state will get involved, and they may end up having to work with the attorney to identify a successor organization if the organization that you named wasn't there anymore. What's nice about working with a community foundation is if you have the contribution go to the community foundation and those organizations have evolved over time and maybe your original organization no longer exists or it mutated into something else. If it's outside of that area of interest you had, or it changed outside the area of interest you had, the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation can bird dog that for you, your estate, your legacy, to make sure that your wishes are still being met with an appropriate organization if the original one you mentioned is no longer there. And I think that is one of the greatest advantages, because we have seen where people will give to a particular church and that church might be gone. We've seen that happen. And there may not be another one, or maybe the one that it evolved into doesn't meet the criteria that you originally established for your area of interest in giving. All right. I got some of the notes from that from the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation. I told them I was talking this evening about that and asked if they could give me a little blurb on it. I thought we were going to be pitching tonight and I wouldn't have time to have a guest. I'll have to bring them on another time. But they do have information if you're interested in checking out a foundation at the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation. Their website is lvcfoundation.org. lvcfoundation.org. A very passionate group of people really on a mission to make a difference in the Lehigh Valley, and through their partnerships with organizations like the United Way. I was just at a meeting today with the Women's Leadership Council of the United Way, and we were talking about signature projects that we have helping area schools, Lincoln Elementary in Bethlehem and Central Elementary in Allentown, Project Easton, and the Literacy Center. So we have a lot of projects, and we're also looking to benefit or do partnerships to stem the flood of human trafficking that we see coming into the valley and all over the country. We're hoping to partner up with some of these organizations. As Carolyn had mentioned, what a great way to get involved in your community by doing those donations of your time, your talent, and your treasure, if that's possible. Of course, these organizations always need some treasure. So for folks who have the treasure, who have the time, who have the talent, you can do it all. For folks who may not have the treasure, you can certainly do it with your time, which as many of our volunteers here at WDIY do each and every week. In fact, my engineer, Jeff, tonight is a volunteer, and I really appreciate it. Would not be able to do the show without him. And all the volunteers who were here during our pledge drive taking all of those calls, we would not be able to do it without those volunteers. So when you can give your time and your talent, that's just a tremendous gift as well. I wish that there was a way to take a deduction for all of that, because boy, would that be a lot worth a lot. But we also do it because we love helping and passionate about the causes that we get involved with. And if there is some tax deduction that might go along with that, well, that's just an added bonus. So again, if you are doing things like driving around for those nonprofits, keep track of your miles. If you're donating cash or gifts or things in kind, keep track of those receipts, put it in a tax folder, pull it out at tax time to see if it's going to help you with those tax deductions. If you're someone who's over 70 and a half, talk to your accountant or talk to your custodian about whether or not it makes sense for you to make a distribution out of your IRA for that charity. Really, let's say it's $3,000, why take $3,000 out of your IRA and pay income tax on it? And you net out maybe $2,600 out of your $3,000, and then take $3,000 of cash out of your bank and go give that to the charity. Instead, you could do the $3,000 directly out of the charity, save $400. $400 is nothing to sneeze at. I tell people, if you saw $5 on the floor, would you pick it up? Well, yeah, some people say they'd pick up a quarter. That's how that works. So if $400 in my example, that's a lot of money. And that was, you know, on a $3,000 contribution possibly. So it's about being proactive, not reactive, and thinking about what options are available to you. Make it a fun thing you do during dinner. Talk about it. See where you're going. These little things that we can do in our financial life, these little choices that we can make in our financial life, start to add up and make a difference. And the wonderful thing about charitable giving is it just keeps giving. It goes back and forth. I want to mention we had a client who passed away recently, and she wrote a letter to a bunch of people, and they used some life insurance money to make small gifts to 88 people, $500 to 88 people, and she asked them to go scatter kindness. I can't talk about it because I'll get emotional, but the idea is you take something, $50, $100 that you don't need, and or maybe that it's, you know, your cup runneth over, and go use it to scatter kindness. Maybe pay for a child's uniform at Central Elementary, or pay for, give some extra money to a homeless person you might see. So what a concept in this show of charitable giving and this pledge drive coming to an end, if we all are able to scatter kindness in some way. And it doesn't always have to be charitable to charitable organizations. It could just be scatter kindness to those in need who might need a little lift that day, maybe a bouquet of flowers or something like that, a cupcake, a cookie, a smile. So scatter kindness. And I was given permission to share that story as well. So I love that, and I hope it gets legs on it and runs wild. Scatter kindness. I want to thank the listeners, especially Carolyn tonight. Thank you, Lori, for being here, and Jeff, as always. Next week, we'll discuss with a financial advisor and CFP, Lisa Strom, engaging with your money is not just for men. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.